JD Henshaw, this is a, I know this is a bit of a coup for Fringe Review that you're going to announce that Sweet Venues is actually covering Fringe Theatre in North Korea now, I hear.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the place we always wanted to end up, really, was where someone would tell us what to put on and how good it would be. Yeah, absolutely. But do you know what? You know you're guaranteed the numbers.
But I guess behind that as well is there is a story that the Fringe can be accused sometimes of crazy growth that doesn't help anybody. And then there's no growth where you stagnate. And somewhere in there is Sweet Venues that has been definitely experimenting in new places, has got a home in Scotland, but has, you know, you haven't radically been growing here either. You've done it gently, haven't you?
I'm a big believer in the softly, softly thing. I don't think there's any point in rushing at it. You want to grow organically, otherwise you're just forcing it. Yeah. And that's the last thing I'd ever want to do, is try and manufacture numbers. We want to be there and we want to get bigger when that demand is there. And we're very fortunate that people want to be with us, so we get to grow. And I think that's what it's about. It's the artists allowing us to grow with them.
Yeah. And how does it happen? I mean, do you just sort of wander into a hotel and go, those rooms look nice, can we have them? How do you find these spaces?
That's actually, that's kind of it. Yeah, yes, you're not far off. You get in your head, you think, right, I'm looking for this thing. I know that I've got these artists who want to work with us. So last year when we did our Edinburgh expansion, that was very much it. We were sitting there looking at it going, we've got these people we've worked with before who want to come back, we've got new people coming in, and there's just not enough room. We need something else. But what is it that we need? Well, you're going, well, these are the things that they like from us. So it's then trying to find a partner to work with that's got those things that tick those boxes that are going to make your artist feel comfortable, looked after and supported.
Yeah, and I guess there are spaces, you know, for example in August and May, that are a bit quieter because the weather's good. And so if you've got a space like The Works in Brighton, which you know, is a place where people hang out to work literally and rent space, but there are meeting rooms and there are areas there, when you then walk in, what's going on in your head when you're actually saying, well, it's not a theatre space but it's going to become one? What's the sort of steps that you go through?
It's an odd one because I've done it for so long now. You end up in this really bad habit of anywhere you go, you start looking at it going, oh, I could put some scaffold in that corner and there'd be a nice sort of 3 meter by 3 meter stage. We could make that happen. And then you go, oh, actually, no, we're not allowed in here, are we? This is the middle of, you know, some big restaurants. And you can't help but assess it. I think that's the same with anybody who works in any sort of branch of theatre and performance. You end up going into any space and thinking, oh, how would I do the thing that I like doing here? You just want to find that place that knows that they could benefit from the Fringe. So you know that they are going to enjoy seeing new footfall, new audience, because obviously we're going to bring in entirely different demographics to people that normally use that building. It's about finding someone that you go, oh, you've got this really lovely cafe and it gets used in this way. I think we could probably bring you new people who didn't know this was here, and so that you can both grow from that and everybody wins. So, you know, the artists are getting a great hub and everything's there and it's buzzy. Your partner's able to turn around and go, oh, great, we've just seen all of these people we would never have seen for that month of May. And you hope that some of that then sticks and they get that for the rest of the year. And we're getting to experiment and do something new, which is... It is exciting. Building new spaces is super exciting. I mean, it's got challenges, but it's great fun.
Well, and I'm interested in that in more detail, because here we're sitting at the Old Steen in Brighton, you know, and the Spiegel tent and the Bosco have just popped up in the last few days. And over the way, if I look to my left, is the Marlborough Theatre, which is a year-round venue that's been there for a very long time. And if you go upstairs, you'll see there's a stage that's there year-round, and there's been well thought out curtains that close, and there's a lighting box, and there are seats. And certainly Sweet Venues has gone into a room and mimicked that very well in its pop-up space, so it's put a stage and so on. But sometimes there are new opportunities because it's not a theatre and you have to build it. So what else can you do that's actually good that it's not a theatre waiting to happen?
That's an interesting question. I think it's the going into the space and then you can start imagining the alternative things you can achieve, because a new space that I'll be operating in August, we realised that it's got these little adjunct rooms coming off of it, and you go, well, wait a minute, that means you could have surprise entrances and all sorts and things that a standard theatre just couldn't achieve, and actually its permanency works against that. You'd have to rebuild it, remodel it. So I think it gives you a bigger opportunity to play. and it gives you a bigger opportunity to actually interact with your artist, because then you're able to turn around and go, oh yeah, actually, see that weird idea you've got? I can do that. And even sometimes that is as simple, so to speak, as turning a room back round on itself so that it goes from being a standard sort of studio space to all of a sudden they're in the round and that sort of thing. And I do run a couple of rooms that are entirely designed around being flexible and being changeable. But then the other thing is, yeah, that you can create these alternative opportunities for artists to use the room and surprise the audience, which is really exciting.
Yeah. And are there kind of challenges too? So different acoustics, you know, the ability to have entrances in the wrong place and you just have to work around that. I guess you've got to creatively problem solve more than if you had a theatre just waiting to happen.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a very different thought process. And I think there's a very sort of dynamic process when you're doing the first ever build of a new space. You've designed it, you've done all these things, and then, you know, we've had it before where you suddenly realise that where you needed to put that support, actually you can't because there's a ventilation pipe or something like that, and you go, oh right, I better rethink all of that, and you end up redesigning it on the fly. Acoustics, we tend to try and find spaces where that feels good. The tricky bit then is, yeah, once you put up the drape and turn it into a theatre, sometimes you kill sound in a different way than you expected. That's one of those challenges that you don't know until you go live, which you just have to sort of roll with it. Yeah. And then you go, right, well, is there a thing I can now do to fix that? Silly things happen where you suddenly realise, actually, where I'm running my cabling, I can't have my sound cabling next to my electrical cabling because you carry bad signals, it makes buzzies. And then you think, well, how am I going to get that cable apart? Because actually, that's the only logical way for it to go, and fire safety and all these things. But creative challenges, you just have to start thinking outside the box.
Yeah. And something else, I mean, you may be too close to this to be aware of it, but I've talked to a lot of people that put shows on in places like Sweet. A couple from Brighton that have gone up to Edinburgh. And yeah, there are small, intimate venues like the Marlborough, for example, in Brighton. But there are actually mostly theatres that are over 100 seats in a lot of places. And so what you end up doing is you end up choosing a venue and you never quite fill it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, here at Sweet there are some venues 35, 40 seats. And so you can have an experience as a kind of rookie theatre maker as well of the glass being completely full quite easily. And so you can go there, have a great fringe experience because you've filled your venue and not half-filled a venue you never had a hope to fill.
That's exactly one of our aims. I'm a huge believer in that sort of small F fringe, because we want to see these pieces of work tour, and that's a huge challenge. That's why, obviously, we do operate up and down the country, and we're trying to create those opportunities as we go along. Because, yeah, you've built a show that is actually only designed for 50 people to ever come and see at one time, and as soon as you go over that, it breaks it, and that's a real shame. And then you find other venues that, and I understand, because it's their business model and they need it, they're looking for an interval so they can sell wine and snacks in that middle point, but your show is 60 minutes. And you do see it, sadly, sometimes people when they're touring feel obliged to force another 20 to 30 minutes onto a show, and it is padding because they've made something perfect. They've made a great piece of art that is 50 to 60 minutes long. And I think from my perspective as a theatre maker and a venue producer, we want to create the opportunities that allow that art to exist and thrive. Because, yeah, not everything is a 200-seat plus extravaganza. Sometimes you just want something that sits in the palm of your hand and holds that audience right there. And it is a 25-seat room because that's the aim, that's the goal. We've got some shows this year that are only 20 seats, and they're sitting in rooms that could take more capacity, but they're designed to be that experience. So I think that's it, isn't it? It's the shifting from simply consuming the act of viewing a show to the experience of being a show. And if we get the opportunity to help someone craft that as finely tuned as they can, that's amazing.
And also, being very just, compassionate, that it is a hard world, and you know, in Edinburgh, you know, and Brighton, there's a lot of competition for, you know, those spaces.
Absolutely.
And actually, when people come to me and go, we sold out last night, and it is a 20-seater, or that we only wanted 20 in the audience, that's okay, isn't it? That's okay. And to book a venue where it is 100 seats, and you end up saying, we only had 30 in, and yet it could be the same show at Sweet and say we sold out. That's just, you know, human beings do have a right not to be unhappy all the time.
Absolutely, yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. They should be able to book the size of room that's appropriate to them. I mean, there's always going to be that challenge, because spaces inevitably end up with that thing of size of stage starts relating to the size of audience capacity. The bigger the stage, the larger typically the audience is. But I think we've got enough range to allow people to have that choice.
Yeah.
And yeah, feel good. Yeah, get to the end of it and go. Especially the one that always bugs me is, as you say, they end up in a 100-seat venue, but the show in their head is for 40 people. And if every day they got 40 people, they've achieved exactly the thing they hoped to do, but they're under half the capacity of the room, which makes you feel a bit lousy. And that's a real shame, because actually they've totally achieved the goals of the show, and they should be able to feel brilliant about that. So it is nice to be able to give them space to present that actually completely correlates to their vision of the show.
Just for a bit of fun, slight mischief. So, I mean, you've got bigger venues too in all your spaces around the UK, but if I offered you the Brighton Centre for a couple of weeks, you know, we're at a loose end here. We've heard you guys are okay. Want to try and experiment. How would you handle, you know, a couple of thousand seater?
Do you know, I would approach it in largely the same attitude that we have about finding the right work to fill that space. So it would be about having fun and enjoying it. Because there are shows that want that amount and you'd want to work with them in that space. I suppose the cheeky bit of me would be, we'll just subdivide it up.
Become 200 studio spaces.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we've got perfect amount of space for 20 seats in each of these. But yeah, I think it's about producing the work with the artist that has the work for your space. We say this a lot when we're doing the booking. There are shows that I have desperately wanted to have with us, and I've told them to go to other venues because I know that other venue has the space for them, and my space isn't quite right. And you want to see them achieve the goal, which is a good piece of art. And it doesn't matter then what that art is, whether it's to make you laugh, make you cry, make you think, make you just walk out bewildered. You have the right to have that in the space that makes you able to raise your baby correctly. And yeah, it's always really sad when you go, oh God, I love this. I want to be all over this show. And you go, no, my rooms are wrong. But I think that's the honest thing to do. And I think it's the right thing to do as a venue promoter and producer to say to someone, I love this work. This work's going to be great. Go to venue X, because actually I've been in that space and it's exactly the thing for you.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
So I'm not going to offer you the O2 quite yet, then.
No.
On a personal note, looking at you, you're younger than me, but there are a few grey hairs in that beard. And here you are in Brighton, and I see you in Edinburgh, and there's Dundee, and there may be other projects. It's a great line from Lord of the Rings where I think it's the Hobbit, Bilbo says, I feel like butter spread over too much bread. How do you juggle that in a way that keeps you happy and healthy?
I don't know if I can manage the happy and healthy. That's probably not true.
There is a danger, you know, that the venue owners end up not enjoying any of it because they can never sit still for too long and then they can never, you know, taste it properly.
Yeah, and I think that's, you do see it. You see venue managers, owners burn out, or you see people who have stayed in it for maybe too long and they just seem a bit miserable every time it rolls round. I've just always taken the attitude that If the day comes where I genuinely have stopped enjoying it, I'm not talking about a bad work day. We all have bad days where we go, oh, God, see it far enough.
Yeah.
If I sit there and go, I am unhappy doing this, well, that's the point to stop. That's the point to either consolidate and say, well, this is as far as it goes. Or it's the day that you say, well, actually, maybe I'm not the person to continue leading that project forward. And it's time to step back a little and let the next person come up who's got that.
Yeah.
That fire for it.
So you haven't got furious busyness. When you come away from Brighton, Edinburgh looms. How do you rest? How do you find that calm point?
I probably do have furious busyness,
okay,
actually.
I thought so.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not very good at holidays. Christmas is wonderful. I take Christmas off.
Yeah.
And I don't typically take much else off. I mean, we're in the beginning throes at the moment of planning a festival in Dundee, which is dead exciting.
So you don't head up to the Kyle of Tongue and meditate for a week or something?
No, I've taken a couple of breaks over the last 4 years, but I love doing this. You meet so many people and I get to sit in the sunshine talking to you and see all these artists, and it does keep you energised. I think as long as you're still enjoying the reasons you do it, the doing it does help. Yeah, there are days where you sit there doing admin and you just think, this is what I got into theatre for. Yeah, paperwork. And it's a bit dull and you think, oh, why? And then you get that odd email that comes in that just goes, oh, thanks so much for that time when. And you go, oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, and it just brightens you back up again and you just keep going for it. Yeah.
Final question, which is actually, it's a kind of creative challenge because it's all on the website, you could say. But what would be your kind of advice to some, I would guess, not one of the biggest theatre companies in the world, that is thinking, yeah, Brighton Fringe, you know, Edinburgh Fringe, another Fringe, but then they hear about suite venues at these two. What would be the reason, you know, beyond PR, to come and locate their show with you?
I think the main reason to come to us is to be in a sort of cultural family supportive environment where you know everybody that's there has theatre experience, that they've gone through a lot of what you've gone through and are just genuinely there to make this a great time. We are always so conscious of the fact that I can't promise anybody they're going to make some massive pile of money and be discovered and propelled to the heady heights of whatever they think are their heady heights. But I do think we're so committed to making sure that the experience of your Fringe is a positive one, that you get all the learning that you want from it, that you, and you walk away with new connections and new friends, and that you know in 3 months after that Fringe is finished, you could still get in touch with the people who were around you and go, I'm just wondering, could I just pick your brain about this thing? And they'll go, oh yeah, sure, here's my time. And I think that's really important, and that they feel supported and included in something that is bigger than just their show. And I sort of touched on it yesterday in our launch. It can be a very isolating thing, producing your work. But when we have a bunch of isolated people or groups suddenly come together and be able to share that experience, it can be a really uplifting time. You know, scary, but genuinely exciting, and that ephemeral moment suddenly becomes something that's your life. And you can see that career opportunity from it. Or, you know, you just simply see a lifestyle that you would like to continue in from it. And that's what we hope for.
The only way I can ever get you to sit down for 10 minutes is to interview you, which I've just done. So JD Henshaw, compulsively busy but happy man. Thanks for talking to us.